Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Yeah, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you on this, third week of the Jeff Poor Show. We have survived it and made it this far. Feeling better about the prospects day by day. It's a, you just live your life day by day. That's a good approach to it in these new endeavors. Still to go on the program, State Representative Matt Simpson joins us at the bottom of the hour, coming in studio. You want to stay tuned for that. Give you a preview of tomorrow's program, our usual Tuesday guest. From the Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor will be with us. We'll also have, from Alabama's 5th Congressional District, Congressman Mo Brooks, and State Senate Majority Leader Greg Reed will be with us. Talk about, he's got a couple of things in the hopper here. Talk about college football, obviously, but a fourth debate in Alabama he's pushing for. A long shot, but interesting discussion to have about a presidential debate in the state of Alabama. He partnered with Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth and House Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter for this, and they sent a letter to the Commission on Debates. Have not heard back, but we'll get the details all for you tomorrow. Make sure that you tune in. Joining us now, he is the chairman of the Baldwin County Republican Party. It was nice enough to invite me to moderate a debate earlier this year for the 1st Congressional District. Michael Hoyt joins us. Chairman, how are you today?
Jeff, I'm great, and I had no idea when you accepted our invitation to moderate that debate that would encourage you to come on down and relocate here, and we're glad that happened.
It was like a recruiting tool. It was like just that extra little bit that brought us that brought me your way.
Well, we're glad to have you here.
Let's get right into it. Chairman, first up, you just opened your new headquarters there, Foley, I believe. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're open now in Foley. The location is the Landmark Building, and there's a historic building, and there's a big marquee, the Landmark Building at 316 South McKenzie Street in Foley, just a block or two south of 98 on the west side of 59 there, just so, south of Goodyear.
So it's really, this is what you're seeing right now. You're gearing up, getting ready for November 3rd, but that is a place for people to go. Maybe they want a yard sign or something they can go to that stop and get what they need or find out what they need.
They can come down there and get, the hours are 12 to 6 Monday through Friday, 12 to 3 on Saturday. Trump signs, Trump merchandise, T-shirts, hats, pens, all of that stuff, flags. We have signs for all of our Republican candidates, Jerry Carl, Tommy Tuberville. So, and I can tell you, we opened on Thursday at noon. About 2 hours into it, we were out of Trump merchandise signs. So we've restocked that, and we are, it's, people are on fire, and they're ready for it.
Well, yes. Well, I mean, in Baldwin County, traditionally Republican, but can you tell from past election cycles, perhaps, and there's the level of enthusiasm where this kind of rates with the other cycles?
This is, in my opinion, this is outpacing 2016. The enthusiasm for Trump and for our Republican candidates, and particularly the Senate race as well, people are energized. There's more energy. There's more enthusiasm. People understand the importance of this election. And they want to outwardly express that through signs and flags and that kind of thing. So it's just very popular. And my feel is that there's more enthusiasm. I think we'll see an even bigger turnout this go around.
And then, you know, Baldwin County, the site of the big boat parade over the weekend. People showing the support is manifesting itself in different ways.
And as my understanding, with that boat parade, there was one over near, like, Clearwater, Florida, that may have set a world record of participants, over 2,000 units. So people are very supportive of President Trump all along the Gulf Coast and into Florida, and they're very excited about it. And if I could just say also, we are opening a Daphne headquarters, which will open this Thursday at 1 o'clock.
It'll have all the same offerings as the Foley store, I assume.
These hours are going to be a little different right now, and that's just due to staffing. That'll be Wednesday through Friday, 1 to 6, and on Saturdays, 11 to 4. And the location of this is 1203 Highway 98, and there's a whole slate of office suites there. It's in the same spot slot where Southwood Kitchen is, across from Urgent Care. People will know where that is, right off of 98. That'll open this Thursday.
Y'all go check it out if that's what you're looking for. Chairman, let's talk about what's going on in Baldwin County now. From my perspective, it's a place people want to live. There's a lot of new people coming in. What do you see keeping the high level of Republican support to these new people coming in? Has that been an issue?
Well, I tell you that Baldwin County grows by 12 new residents a day and has for the past several years. And we saw back in the 2018 cycle, we had a huge turnout. And of course, a lot of our voters are new voters. They're voters from other parts of the country or other parts of the state. And so you wonder, is that going to change the tone and tenor of the electorate in Baldwin County? But I can tell you that if the 2018 results are indicative of future results, it doesn't change. And in fact, it's grown even more Republican. The cycle over cycle from 2016 to 2018, we increased straight Republican ticket voting 10 percentage points. It's over 51%. So over 51% of the people that went into the polls in the 2018 cycle voted straight Republican. We've seen those numbers increase. And I think people see when they come to our area what has made Baldwin County great has been the vision and leadership and values of the Republican Party and our candidates who've been in office for now decades. And so you don't change that. You want to keep that. We keep Baldwin County great, and we do that by voting for Republicans who will maintain our way of life here.
I think a lot of people are just worried, though. You see places around the country where people flee their Democrat playground cities to go south or go other places, but they bring their politics with them and they start voting Democrat, but not really seeing that in Baldwin County, are we?
We're not seeing that, but we have to be ever vigilant. We never rest on our laurels, so we make sure that people understand that what has made Baldwin County great and what attracts people here is our policies of less government intrusion, of lower taxes and regulation, of freedom to do what you want to with your own property. And so when people understand those values, and they don't want to change that. Now, that doesn't mean that some aren't going to come down here and vote the other way, but thus far I can tell you that there has been no fruits that have resulted from any of that. And in fact, it has gone the opposite way, and I think you're going to see that in this election cycle as well. It'll be an even bigger voter turnout, and it's going to be more Republican.
We're joined by Baldwin County Republican Party Chairman Michael Hoyt here on FM Talk 106.5. Chairman, tell me this last election cycle, we just got done with the primary side of that. Tommy Tuberville, obviously the U.S. Senate nominee now. Did you notice this? This is a trend I kind of watched. It may just be because you had a congressional race down here as well, but these statewide candidates are really spending more time in our part of the state maybe than they have in the past.
Well, I think they understand, and rightfully so, that if you want to win, and this bears out in many election cycles past, if you want to win statewide office in Alabama, you're going to have to come down here and win Mobile and Baldwin County, particularly in our area. And Baldwin County is solidly red Republican, and so it's very important for any candidate for statewide office to come down here and get your name and your platform known, because we are very important. And that bears out whether it's in a primary, statewide primary, or in the general election. I believe our counties down here are key. And so you're going to see more candidates spending more time down here. And we're glad of that, because we want to have a voice, and we're glad that our voice is heard statewide, absolutely.
It's a very unique county politically. The geographic spread from Little River to Orange Beach, that's a lot of territory. But I think with all that territory, you have different stripes, different flavors of the Republican Party.
Well, you absolutely do. And unlike the monolithic left, we do have, we can always have some debates within our party on certain maybe fine points of policy. But we are the people's party. We're the Big Ten party. We don't necessarily march in lockstep like the other side does, and so there may be various interests that people have that certainly are going to be different in Perdita than they are down in Gulf Shores. But ultimately, we understand that valuing our American heritage, our Christian values, and the values of our party are what's most important. And so there may be some differences on a few fine points here and there, but we unite as a party, and you see that after primaries. And once we've picked our candidate, we're going to unite behind him and we're going to support him. And as you know, Ronald Reagan used to say about Tip O'Neill and some of his political opponents, 80% my friend is not 20% my enemy. And we don't believe that. We believe that we can have some disagreements, but we're all members of the same party, and we're going to support our candidates.
Let's just got a few more moments here with you before I have to let you go. How do you feel about the national scene right now, the presidential race? Obviously, I assume you feel pretty good. The Baldwin County is probably going to go Trump, more than likely not. But generally, though, what's your feeling on this race?
My feeling, looking at the national landscape, is that normal American people, regardless of your political stripes, look at the rioting and destruction in these Democrat-controlled cities around the country. They don't want that in their backyard. They understand that these places have been ruled with an iron fist by Democrats sometimes decade after decade, 40 or 50 years. They don't want that in their backyard. And so, but they're not answering polls necessarily, just like they didn't in 2016. So I don't buy any of these national polls. I feel the same way that I did back in 2016, was that regardless of what the polls might say or the talking heads on the news program, you have to look at what the people are doing. And you look at things like the boat parade and the rallies and all of these, the way that President Trump energizes and mobilizes people. And that's what you look at. And in reading the tea leaves and looking at that, I do believe that there is a silent majority, and they're going to come out like they did in 2016, I think to even a larger extent, and they're going to reelect President Trump. I feel good about it, and I felt the same way in 2016. Even on election night, and I had gone up to the probate court to watch some of the returns come in, and some of our Republican people there were very downtrodden because those early numbers coming in for Hillary didn't look good for the president. And I said then, I said, now, hold, stay the course, and we see how that turned out. I feel the same way I did then, and I think people are even more energized. And I believe President Trump will be reelected.
Chairman, we've got to wrap it up there, but before I let you go, folks want to find out, remind them the locations, or the forthcoming location of the headquarters, and where they can find out more about the party itself.
Thank you, Jeff. Headquarters for South Baldwin are located in Foley at the Landmark Building, 316 South McKenzie Street, 12 to 6 Monday through Friday, 12 to 3 on Saturday. And coming this Thursday, opening at 1 o'clock, is our Eastern Shore headquarters located at 1203 Highway 98 in Daphne. And they'll be open Wednesday through Friday, 1 to 6, and Saturdays, 11 to 4. Come on down and get your Trump signs and merchandise, Tupperville signs, and Jerry Carl and all of our other candidates.
Chairman, as always, thanks for making time for us.
Thank you, Jeff. As always, appreciate you.
Baldwin County Republican Party Chairman Michael Hoyt on the line. We got to take a break. We shall return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Ain't nobody looking back.
All right, let's take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Coming up in just a moment, warming up at the bullpen, as they say. State Representative Matt Simpson joins us. Who's excited for tonight's Democratic National Convention? Talked about this a little bit earlier in the program. Obviously, the Alabama connection, Randall Woodfin, Doug Jones speaking tonight. And my tip for you guys watching this, just watch how different these guys, all these speakers. We'll run down the speakers list for you real quick here in just a moment. But watch out about how different they are there's a real movement afoot in the Democratic Party to kind of tamp down on that left flank, I think. That's why Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are talking for like 3 minutes or whatever combined. Anyway, tonight you get, or I guess starting today and going into tonight, you have Senator Amy Klobuchar, you have Governor Andrew Cuomo, you have Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan. That's really, that was my hope. That was my dream right there. If they could have made her the running mate, oh man, that would have been just fabulous. Also got House Majority Whip James Clyburn, kind of really instrumental in the whole why Biden is where he is. I think without Clyburn, that primary goes on longer, but Clyburn was able to get Biden South Carolina because he did so terribly in Iowa and New Hampshire. Comes in, has a dominant performance in the South Carolina Democratic primary, and all of a sudden he is the presumptive nominee because they all start dropping like flies. And I think there was a lot of things going on behind the scenes there, but that win in South Carolina solidified Joe Biden's path to the nomination. Let's see, we got Benny Thompson, the congressman from Mississippi. He's also the convention chairman. We have Congresswoman Gwen Moore, and yes, our favorite Senator Doug Jones. Those are the highlights. Also, Randall Woodfin. He is one of their up and comers. The mayor of Birmingham is supposed to speak as well. But those are the big names, if you will. So giving Doug Jones a prime time spot. Maybe they are trying to moderate. Now, I know we could say, but Doug Jones, he's voted against Trump 97% of the time or whatever, but the perception of Doug Jones is that he is a moderate, that he is not the left-wing crazy Democrat. So why would you promote him? Well, that's, I think they are trying to, at least people that pay attention to these things, they're trying to moderate. They're trying to go in a certain direction. You always say, well, you run to the right or the left in the primary, and then you moderate in the general. We haven't seen that phenomenon quite as much with the Democrats, but they know where their energy is. Their energy is not the moderate. Their energy, that if they are going to win in November, they're really going to have to keep their base excited. I don't think it's going to work. This feels to me like 68, 72, with all the unrest, the rioting. Then you have the cultural phenomenon as Woodstock that we still celebrate for some silly reason. But it really didn't win them elections, the Democrats or the liberals. The Democrats were able to avoid that with Biden, I think. But it just got somebody like George McGovern the nomination. And then you have the 49 state landslide or whatever. But so it remains to be seen if all of this we're seeing in the streets really matters, or it just motivates people to say law and order, which apparently is a racist code word according to some on the left on MSNBC. But I think the law and order, we know what it means. Generally, people want strong police. They really want. They don't want to deal with feeling unsafe when they go shopping. You want to be able to just live your life, go to the mall. You don't really care about any of this. You don't want to have somebody screaming Black Lives Matter at you. And the votes will reflect that in some places. So it's not a given. It's not a layup. But just how many people like that are out there? And the next question would be, how many people are like that out there that will vote Republican because of that? Because there's all the negatives with Trump and people just being tired of the chaos, and there is going to be always this element of people. I was talking to somebody the other day that I'm not crazy about Biden. I'm not crazy about Trump. I just want it. I want all this chaos over with. And I don't think we're going to get to being back to normal until he's out of office. I'm voting for Joe Biden. I just want him gone. I don't really care about any of this. That's my motivation. How many people are like that out there? How many people like that are in that boat? They're not really staked out ideologically. They just see Trump as the root of all the problems. and they think by voting him out that this goes away. I would disagree with that suggestion, don't get me wrong, but there is a school of thought that you only get normalcy when he's gone. But I think angry people are always going to be angry. People that like to go break storefronts at restaurants or whatever, go disturb Sunday brunch, are still going to be that person. They're not going to magically turn into somebody else because of the next president. Got to take a time out. We'll return. This is FM Talk 106.5. Getting crazy. I'm getting hammered. Sitting right here at the floor of Bama. At the floor of Bama. I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side. And welcome back to the Jeff Poehler Show on FM Talk 106.5. Got tomorrow on the program from the Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor, Congressman Mo Brooks from Alabama's 5th Congressional District, and State Senate Majority Leader Greg Reed. Make sure that you tune in tomorrow. Ought to be a fantastic program. But joining us now, speaking of fantastic, here is it, you guys on the Eastern Shore and some of you guys in the northern suburbs of Mobile, State Representative Matt Simpson. And Representative, how are you this morning?
I'm doing really well, Jeff. Today is the first day of fall practice for the football, for college football, and they announced the SEC schedule tonight, so I'm pumped. Today's a good day.
I feel optimistic we're going to see this go as planned.
I want to hope that we are. I want to live in this dreamland right now, where this utopia where we're going to have college football and everything's going to work out fine and everything will be, and we'll play 10 SEC games and have an SEC championship, and then we'll have a college football playoff between the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, and probably a second SEC team. That's the euphoria I want to live in right now today, and think that that's what's going to happen.
It's just I'm there with you, but I'm very pessimistic. I'm skeptical that this will go off. I feel like it's not so much that I feel like the plan's okay. I don't really have problems with that, but the media, the closer we get to November 3rd, they're just going to raise objections. That would be my concern, that we're going to politicize even that. You got to be skeptical. People, they're going to find people not wearing their masks properly, or they're going to find the one player that is diagnosed with the virus, and then there'll be calls to call it all off. We can't do it responsibly, or something like that.
I think you're ahead of the game. If you look at what happened yesterday with Cecil Hurt and Greg Byrne tweeting out what happened at I think it was outside Gillette's in Tuscaloosa, where they had people standing outside, and there was a crowd, and there was a large portion of them not wearing masks, and it just seemed like the argument they were trying to make is this is why college football season's not going to happen, and they want to blame it on the fans and blame it on – and I think that's the message and narrative that they want to send out there, is it's not necessarily Greg Byrne and Cecil Hurt, but there is the media contingent that is looking for reasons for this not to happen. They want to say, ha-ha, Alabama, you're a Trump state. You voted Trump. Now you cost yourself college football. You can't even save college football. You're ignorant. And the politicizing of everything has gotten so bad that's why I want to live in this bubble right now, where we just say, hey, let's just talk about the college football season and what goes on, because it gets everything has become narrative. Everything has become – it's so difficult to watch sports anymore without in-your-face politicizing. You know, I watched NBA, and it's very tough to watch without fans. The events anymore – the games don't seem like events. It's just like a scrimmage.
Is that really a big part of it? Because I've watched some of the baseball games. The fans are never that interesting to me. We had Dale Jackson on the last hour. He's like, well, the reason why the ratings are suffering, he thinks a big part of it is it's just they're playing in these empty venues.
I think so. I listened to Dale earlier. I agree with him completely. It doesn't seem like that. Put it on your calendar. This is important. If you don't have that atmosphere in the stadium or in the ball field going on and saying, wow, look at how loud the fans are. Look at how much they're celebrating. I mean, you think about it. You see Alabama versus, let's say, you know, Georgia Southern, and the fans are half gone after the third quarter, and people just seem like, well, it just doesn't seem like something. But if it's the fans are rocking, and I have been amazed how much fans have really brought to sports. I really didn't understand that. I was like, oh, well, these are the best players. People are going to watch the best players play the best games, and that's what they want to watch. But the fan atmosphere and the cutaways and the close-ups of the people yelling and the surrender cobras and the people crying and everything, it's a it really does provide a – it makes it to that next level to have fans there. And when you watch these games now, you watch basketball, you watch, you know, soccer, baseball, whatever's going on, it really just seems like a scrimmage. It really just seems like it's an AAU game where they're just going through the motions. There's no timeouts taken because fans are rocking and you want to slow down momentum. It's just kind of play through and go through that atmosphere. And it really has changed the sports viewing process when you look at all this stuff. And I'm hopeful that college football can get through it. I'm hopeful that, you know, you and I, we go round and round several times about that. And I think on your very first show, you talked about if Auburn Tiddlywinks is going to be playing on TV, you're going to watch Auburn Tiddlywinks.
Yeah.
Well, if Alabama's Tiddlywinks are playing on TV, I'm watching Alabama Tiddlywinks, and I'm going to text Jeff Poore and make fun of him about our third-string Tiddlywink player just stepped up and made a huge catch, and well, whatever you do in Tiddlywinks.
I don't know what Tiddlywinks are, but I should be yelling more Eagle. If we were really good at it, if it was, yeah, I got into the women's softball for a while. That was a big deal. I haven't quite bought into the whole equestrian thing, but I hear we win the national championship at that almost every year. I was big into swimming and diving back in the 2000s when Marsh was there to coach. But I think a lot of it though is where do you find out? People that are just football fans and they like football and they could watch any football game are. They're supporters of the institution, and even if there's no crowd, they're going to be sitting there yelling in front of the TV.
Well, I think people use sports as an escape to try to get away from life and to get away from, you know, you take that 3 hours or 4 hours and you just kind of sit down and enjoy competition. It's not about politics. And unfortunately, every time you turn on the TV anymore for sports, if you turn on ESPN, it was politics. Well, it was before. Now they've tried to change, but they've gone back to it a little bit more since then. You know, I remember growing up when you just leave SportsCenter on. You watch the SportsCenter comes on from 6 a.m. and you watch it, and just to keep it on, and they actually show sports highlights, and they actually talk about the games, and it's interesting. Well, now it's just two people yelling at each other. It's just people saying, you take one side of a position, I'll take the other side. We'll just yell back and forth, and except for liberal issues, then we're both going to take that side and we're going to make fun of whoever is against you on that side from there. The politics has been thrown in the face of the people going on. And I understand. I am not of the shut up and dribble talk. I get it. If people want to express and that's the platform that they want to use and that's how they want to spend their time discussing politics, that's great. But they have to understand that there are people that will turn off and there are people that will not tune in to watch those games. And when the ratings go down and the advertising dollars go down, and that means the salary is going to go down, what happens then? Or do people come back around and say, hey, maybe this isn't the liberal league that we want it to be. Maybe we should allow the NBA players to talk about Hong Kong. Maybe we should allow some of this stuff to happen. We're in a difficult time right now. I think a lot has to do with this November election. I don't know what November the 3rd is going to look like after the election, as far as, you know, I'm hoping for the Republican ticket to get there. But if something doesn't happen, the concern is people are saying, well, we'll just go right back to normal. We'll go right back through everything. And it's scary. It's a scary environment. It's a scary predicament that we're in, where we're just talking about if you vote the way we want you to vote, then you're cool and you're fine and that we'll be happy with you. But if you're not, then you're a loser and you don't deserve to even have screen time to listen to what we have to say.
Well, it's this weird system the weird world we're in right now. It's you know, we like as conservatives like a meritocracy. We like market forces dictating really what's, you know, what people are watching and what, you know, what is popular. But that is, there's a merit system based to that. Right now, even if the NBA has terrible ratings or you know, the elites that do all the marketing that send the ad dollars their way, well, they're still going to give that vote to something that's left of center. They're not going to go right of center. You know, the big name sponsorships and you know, the shoe companies. They're going, if they're checking a box of Black Lives Matter or whatever that might be, whatever the issue is, it's left or center, they're going in that direction. Ratings be damned, attendance be damned. And it feels like, to me as a spectator, that the world's kind of upside down unfairly.
It's that get woke, go broke mentality.
Right.
You know, you're so woke that you turn off half the country where half the country can't stand to watch your program anymore. those eyes will go somewhere else. I don't know what that's going to be. I don't know if it'll be, you know, you hear PGA championship ratings are up and hockey's ratings are up. And I don't know what the next thing will be, but there will be something else. And that's what people need to understand, that there was a point in time where baseball was America's pastime and everybody stayed home and watched baseball. And you could, you know, I remember being a kid coming home and watching Cubs games in the afternoon at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you could watch a baseball game. Well, now baseball doesn't start till 8 o'clock, and nobody, you know, I'm not letting my kids stay up till 8 o'clock to watch a baseball game end at 11:30, because you have to have pitchers, and everybody's so smart now that you have to have specialists for everything you have to do, and it's ruined the sport. And I'm a Braves fan. I appreciate the Braves, and I like watching the Braves, but it's tough to get your kid involved and say, hey, let's get really excited about this Braves program we have going on. It's tough, and when you take eyes off of your product, those eyes will go somewhere else. My kid is all about, like, Harry Potter and all these other things going on now, and it's just a different environment, and I think sports has a part to play in that. They're not the same way they used to be.
Well, it just seems like with ratings down, though, there's not you're not really going to the movie theater. Maybe you're not going to the ballpark, or you're not going bowling or to the skate rink, and you're at home. Everything closes earlier. They got to clean, and so they close an hour or two earlier at a lot of stores. You're home. It would make sense if ratings went up. Ratings are not going up. They're going the other way. People are going – they're just – and maybe there's the get woke part of that. And maybe it's just – to me, it feels like you didn't really – you just kind of jumped in the middle of the season. You didn't build up that routine where, you know, you start out baseball season in the very beginning in April, and you're getting that routine of watching it or having it on, and then it goes away. And then it comes back, but you're already moved on and your routine's changed up, and maybe there's something there to it.
And I'm hopeful that's what college football can fill in. You know, I know we're pushing back kickoff date till September, you know, late September instead of right now. Right now is about the time we'd be gearing up and talking matchups and everything going on for Labor Day, that Labor Day weekend. That's a huge college football weekend. But, you know, we're going to push it back to mid-September, and we'll see what we've got as far as if that's the recipe to bring people back and say we're starting fresh, we're starting to see what we can. Maybe it is laundry. Maybe it is people just care about the laundry and the universities and the institutions that they're local, that they consider themselves a part of. You know, as an Alabama grad, Alabama alumni, you'd like to be a part of the program. So that could be it. And I don't have the same connection with pro sports anymore that I used to have. I used to be, I'm telling you, checking box scores every morning, checking highlights in SportsCenter, and it's just not that way. Maybe I'm old. Maybe I just got old. That could be the answer.
But you see the Alabama aspect. It's Alabama's team. And I was talking about this earlier in the program. You know, it goes back to the 20s when, you know, we were a depressed society in the South, and then here comes University of Alabama. They go score a major national win in the Rose Bowl, and then it builds this tradition that goes on. And I would say not just University of Alabama, but it makes SEC football. It makes it a thing. It's why these rivalries all exist. With professional sports, you have that, but it's really localized. The New Orleans Saints fans, they're everywhere, but they have some tie to New Orleans or something like that, for example. And that the reason why college football will be different is because of that. It's the regional thing, that it's the identity of the place, and you're not as reliant upon a national audience.
Right, and it's that pride that you're looking into. It was the pride, you know, when Alabama in the Rose Bowl in the 20s, when they come out and say, you know what, some team from the South went out there to the West and beat a team from the West, and so we can do stuff well. And we take pride in that down here and say, look, if we compete with you on something we care about, the community will get behind us. The community will support us, and the community will come up and say, this is who I am, and this is the region I support. It's something we've always done. You know, the 90s Braves and the Tomahawk Chop, it's not just that we get behind a winner. It's that we get behind something that shows we care about it, and that's part of us, and we all consider ourselves to be part of that group and to get in that inside. You know, Alabama-Auburn's always going to be there. Like I said, if Alabama and Auburn play anything, I'm watching and I'm texting you and making fun of you for an Auburn mess up. You know, I still remember when, I guess it was, it had to be 2009, 2010, where my wife started unfollowing you on Twitter because of your Twitter post.
All of y'all unfollowed me. just how, what an awful human being you was during the Cam Newton era. I just, because Alabama had won the national championship the year before. It's just like, this just didn't then Auburn emerges and starts piling up some wins, and then I actually lost a lot of followers during football season.
My wife was one of them.
Yeah, but that rivalry is just part of it, and people have, you know, feelings about it. It's just different because these professional sports, they are national pastimes. They are national. They've nationalized the NBA. And to some degree, they have done that with college football, but I still feel like its roots, it's still true to its roots more than these other sports.
Well, college gets to the point. College has the ability, once you go to that college, before the transfer rule, once you go to that college, you were associated with that college. Now pros have gotten free agency, and everybody right. switches every year, and who's the next super team in the NBA where you're really only hired mercenaries for a few years, and then once you sign a contract, you're already trying a way to get out of that contract. You know, college doesn't have that. Right now it doesn't have that. There's the push to try to get these transfers that go through, and the transfer portal has been, I don't know that it's necessarily great for college football. I get that it makes some teams better, but you know, there's something to the fact of, I tell you, when it came to that 2000, I guess it was the 2018 season, when Jalen Hurts stayed and he didn't transfer, and he stood on as the backup, and for him to have that moment where he came in the SEC championship game, that's something Alabama fans will never forget. That's something where that's an Alabama, that's something that you stand for. And now I know he transferred to Oklahoma. We'll forgive him for that. He needed to go there. But we have that opportunity to say, you know what, you stood up and fought for the Alabama, and you're one of us, and we want to thank you for that. So we'll follow people with the pros. I'll watch Miami Dolphins games now because Tua, whenever Tua comes on the field and plays. And, you know, we've got a local A.J. McCarron who plays for the Texans. And, you know, that's good to see, and that's the new style of who's the regional, who cares about where we came from.
Which is, it's crazy watching the Carolina Panthers all these years because of Cam Newton. Like, I bought into the Panthers. Well, my wife's also from Charlotte, which kind of helped it. But now I guess I'm watching the Patriots.
You know.
We're going to take a quick time out. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
You do just fine. I told him on credit, Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Just got a few more minutes remaining in the program. Real quick, tomorrow, coming up on the show from the Media Research Center, Dana Gaynor. Also, Congressman Mo Brooks, Alabama's 5th Congressional District, and State Senate Majority Leader Greg Reed from Jasper will be with us, so make sure you tune in. Probably another guest to be named later, as they say, but still in studio with us. Speaking of guests, State Representative Matt Simpson. Steer the conversation back from sports talk to politics here, but I was kind of watching this, the President's executive order, freeing up money for unemployment, but as far as I can tell, there just doesn't seem to be the ability or the willingness to try to match whatever the requirements are to follow up with that executive order. Have you heard any buzz about that?
My understanding is it's going to be about a $350 million buy that we'd have to put in as the state. Now, if they unlock some of the strings of the CARES Act money, that $1.8 billion, if you allow that to be put into and to pay off some of the coffers for that, I think there would be an absolute interest in it. But as far as coming up with $350 million, we're a very conservative government, a very conservative state, as we ran through here. We do very good to make sure that we spend money where it's supposed to go. And that's when you look into these rolling reserve acts and these reserve funds that we have. That's why we were able to get through this COVID situation without any of those words that you're afraid to say, without the words proration, without the words cutbacks, without having to cut anything. We made through because we have common good sense government where we look forward and say, let's not over budget. Let's not predict these astronomical, hey, we made a 5% increase this year, so we're going to have a 35% increase next year and budget off this 35% increase. We don't budget that way in the state. We've changed when the Republican legislature came in 2010, and we really took over the House and the Senate. And I can't speak for what happened there, but I can speak since 2018. Chairman Poole with the Education Trust Fund in the House, Chairman Klaus with the General Fund Trust Fund in the House, they make sure to spend conservatively. It's not just a matter of, hey, we've got the money, we need to make sure we spend it to you want something in your backyard, or you know, it's not Oprah, you get something, you get something, you get something. It's a matter of how does this money help the state? How does this money be something where we can go forward that's actually good for what we're trying to do? And to we don't allow these budgetary items that are going to be long-term things where it's, okay, it's in the budget this year, and that means it's going to be in the budget
next year
after that. We come through and look at it. We evaluate everything we can, and that good government is the reason why we were able to get through this COVID crisis without having to mortgage anything for the future, or without having to borrow, or without having to put ourselves further in debt. And that's good government, and nobody ever talks about good things that happen in Montgomery, and that is 100% a good thing that happened in Montgomery that we are not talking about proration because we were able to get through based on the budget we had. Now, if we go out and add an additional $350 million, that's a whole new area we're looking at. That's not something that necessarily we believe in to mortgage the future, because at some point that rooster's going to come home. You're going to have to answer for that bill. And you know, hopefully the federal government will allow us to extend what we can spend that CARES Act money on, how we can and can't use that money. It's got to be spent by December the 30th. This is exactly one of the reasons it should be put there out there for. It should be put there to give people who suffered and had to go through unemployment based on this COVID response and have not have an opportunity to bring money home. This allows them to get money back, to allow that unemployment coverage to extend and until they can get back on their feet and recover from this crisis that we're in. So hopefully, and I'm very optimistic that the push will be allow the federal government. I'm not saying give us more money from what you've given us. I'm not necessarily saying we need a second COVID act to come through. What I'm saying is we need to loosen the strings on the money that's already there.
CARES Act money, right?
CARES Act money that's already been appropriated, to allow us to spend it on something to help people that were affected by the CARES Act.
They put such stringent requirements on it, and we learned this from the end of the last legislative session. It's got to be something COVID-related. Not a new state house, but
it's got to be something COVID-related. It has to be spent, and the job has to be completed by December the 31st. So it's not a matter of, hey, we're putting this much money into broadband, because you don't have time to lay that type of broadband cables into the ground. It takes time to actually get that accomplished and get it done.
Matt, as always, thanks for making time for us. We got to get out of here. Folks, it's been good. We'll do it all again tomorrow. This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.